Welcome to the Freud's Angels podcast, where two highly intuitive women dig into everyday problems using our connection to the divine, psychology, and energy work.
We support you in your self-awareness, growth, and aid you in your shadow work. Now we're your hosts.
I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Grace. Let's get into the show. Hey, angels. Welcome. Welcome to episode 165. Today is a super special episode because we do have a special guest. We're going to talk about a topic that is making its round on the interwebs. And it is super popular because it fits along with what we talked about last week. Vanessa, what are we going to do?
We are going to talk about ADHD in a way that nobody's ever heard, I feel. I feel like we're about to get perspectives and words and support and I guess just ideas that are kind of the opposite of what we're used to hearing. We're used to hearing a lot of disordered talk. We're used to hearing about, you know, being not normal, you know, like all this kind of stuff that feels heavy and feels like, oh no, like what am I going to do in the world kind of thing if you have like an ADHD brain. So I'm very excited to hear Kelly's perspectives and to hear, you know, just the insights and everything that comes with it to help those of us out here who have just been raw dogging life with a brain that just doesn't seem to be easily understood by people who don't have the same kind of brain. So yes, I'm very excited to have this chat.
Yes. And so today we have Mrs. Kelly Williams with us. She is a family therapist. She's an ADHD parenting coach. She is the power behind the Parenting Balance website, parentingbalance.com. If you're interested in knowing more about her and more about what she offers, welcome, Kelly. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So let's start off with, like, how did ADHD enter your life? Like, how did this become part of your research, your understanding? What started this journey for you?
So that's a great question. I am a family therapist by training. And I went to, you know, college straight after high school. And then I went straight on to grad school after college. And so since I was in my 20s, I have been working in community mental health and as a mental health professional. And I did lots of different things in all that work. But I kind of wound up, I knew I loved the community mental health part. And community mental health centers are like our treatment of last resort, right? So serving kind of the most ill people in our communities, providing services free of charge if you can't afford to pay for them, you know, doing a lot of emergency crisis intervention, stuff like that. I used to, I developed a jail diversion program, for example, in Florida, where I live now, and through, you know, many years of that work. And then I had a child. And after I had my son, I didn't want to work in the jail anymore. You know, like there's a lot of communicable disease and stuff like that going on in the shelters and the environments where I was spending my time. And so I decided I was going to stop doing that. And I took a job on the faculty in the School of Social Work at the University of South Florida in Florida, where I live. So for a couple of years, I was teaching social workers how to be social workers. And eventually my son was diagnosed with ADHD. And I did what any parent would do, right? I like dove into the research. I learned every single thing that I could about ADHD. But for me, what happened was I was like, oh my God. You know, like it was connecting the dots for me with all these hundreds of people who I had been treating in my mental health career. And I realized I had never gotten any training or much information at all beyond the diagnostic criteria about what ADHD really is. And it is a lot. So there was a period of astonishment. There was a period of anger. There was a period of grief, right? Like all of this rolled up into one. So as I set about to try to help my child, I, of course, went to professionals, right? I went to a doctor. I went to support groups. I started seeking support for myself. And the kind of support I received didn't fit. It didn't fit, you know, it wasn't right. So that, I guess, is where it all began, that I decided I was going to figure it out myself, you know. And so I after my daughter was born, I stopped working at the university. I started working in a little private practice, you know, I kind of started my own little private practice. And I partnered up with a friend and colleague of mine, Teresa. Her specialty was anxiety. And so she had this big practice, not big, but, you know, she had a full practice at the time and invited me to come in to take her overflow. And so now I have all these people coming to me who are seeking treatment for anxiety. And of course, I begin assessing every single one of those people for ADHD. And guess what I found? You know, about 90% of those people who were seeking treatment for anxiety actually had ADHD. And so there were some miraculous things, you know, that happened once we got the proper diagnosis, you know, the proper treatment can follow. And so people were getting better and getting better. And they were like, oh my gosh, I've been to so many people and, you know, nothing ever helped. Nothing ever felt like it fit, right? Like it helped a little bit, right? Because most adults who have ADHD, if they don't know that they have it, they also have anxiety and depression, because that's how it works, because we don't fit, right? Like it's like a round peg trying to fit into the square hole of what our kind of systems are, you know, our academic system, our employment systems, the way that we live. 100%. But yeah, so once you understand about what ADHD is, it, you know, it helps. And here's the thing about it, okay? ADHD is the most treatable condition in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Now, the reason why that is because when you understand how your brain works, then you can work with it, you know, not against it. So in my opinion, it's not a disorder. It is a difference. It is a difference, you know, it deserves accommodation because all of our academic systems are set up for neurotypical brain people, right? And ADHD is absolutely a neurological difference. But I do not believe that it is a disorder.
Yeah.
I'm like so fired up because I really feel that way. I think maybe because of having a personal experience of saying, this has actually helped me once I figured out how to use it, like to my advantage. But I had to learn how to be like, okay, what is your brain doing? And like, how do you make that work for you? Because, it, you know, like the anything that's a disorder is being compared against what, you know what I mean? And that's what we're really thinking of. We're like, what is normal in comparison here? Because that seems very much like a system that was created versus a humanness, you know, based system.
Right. Well, and as you guys are both, you know, people that work with other people, right? And, you know, when you work with so many different humans, you can see there is no such thing as normal. I got to tell you, there is no normal. That doesn't exist. I don't know. Right. Like,
yeah,
no,
we say that all the time. We cringe every time we use the word neurotypical because there's no such thing. There's no, it's varying levels of degrees of how our brain works. And, you know, one of the things that I love about Kelly's work is that it's not about the idea of managing somebody's symptoms. It's about understanding the root of why the symptoms are there to help. And she works primarily with parents for her coaching, the ADHD parenting balance. Like it's primarily to help the parents teach the child how to understand their brain and not have it be something they hate about themselves, and more of an understanding and an acceptance form in a way that says, okay, you know what? We just have to do something different. And it's okay. It's just learning how to know what that type of brain and the way it works and what they need on an individual level, right? Because even children or adults with ADHD, we ADHD at different levels. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. We don't all have the same value of symptoms. There isn't like you have this much of, you know, associative dysfunction or whatever else there is. We all have varying degrees of it in different aspects. And to, you know, to understand it from a lens of like, how do we assist them in creating a life that they can understand themselves from a way of, no, this is just what my needs are versus this is how I handle my illness. Like it's a kind of an, through the lens of acceptance, which we're all about here.
Yeah. And Kelly, you said something in pregame, like you did a different, it's not an anagram. I can't think of it. You defined ADHD differently and it was brilliant. And I'm hoping that you'll share that with us like more in depth right now. Cause it was awesome.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the name, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that's what the letters ADHD stand for. And that's a horrible misnomer. Okay. It's inaccurate. This is actually a brain difference that creates too much attention to too many details at the same time. So it is an abundance of attention, not a deficit of attention. But the other part of this brain difference is that there are less filters filtering out environmental stimuli. And so the acronym I said was attention directed to a higher dimension. People with ADHD are more open to stimuli in the environment, and that includes the universal forces around us, right? So brains with ADHD, you know, are more psychic, are more intuitive, are, you know, all of those things that you guys talk about all the time on your podcast, that comes very naturally to people with ADHD. And we don't, I think as part of like culture, our culture in America, we kind of try to teach that out of kids rather than be like, wow, you have this gift. Look at you, right? And so that's kind of like it's important, you know, for parents of little kids. I think, you know, my calling, I think, is to help kids who have ADHD by helping their parents understand it so that we can reduce the conflict, reduce shame, you know what I mean? Like embrace the gifts, I guess, that come with it, even though, you know, 100% parenting kids with ADHD is above average. It is harder in many, you know, in many ways because, you know, it's a lot. Hyperactivity is a lot. Like,
it's a lot living with it. I mean, and I remember I used to have a friend who had a child with ADHD and the struggle, the constantly being called from work because disrupting in school, like she couldn't. She most of the time to have a full day at work a week was very rare for her, and the disruption and the constant, you know, and I could tell, like, we could tell that the kid was just like so upset because they didn't understand, like, I don't want to be like this, but yet I can't control this. And I really feel that if, you know, if the information that Kelly shares with the world, if that was there, those pieces of information and understandings, if my friend had had that, it wouldn't have been so stressful. It would have been stressful because, you know, understanding that is a lot of work, but the like level of frustration and stress that she was under, it would have just changed immensely and the whole process would have been different. And, you know, and I just, yeah, I'm so glad that you share this with parents and that you share this with the world, because if we can empower parents to help their children through this, then you're helping that next generation have better awareness and understanding for the future generations, right? Because it starts with being a parent. As an adult, we kind of are on doing all the things, and it takes a lot of time and effort. But and we don't generally get there until we're like midlife, like 30s, because we have realizations. But when we're you know, if we learn from as a child going forward, there's a whole different avenue and wealth of understanding that happens. And to be more successful, I mean, could you imagine a world of people with ADHD functioning at their optimal function, knowing how to handle themselves, not handle themselves, knowing how to support themselves through all their phases of life that, you know, maybe they get disrupted, but the disruptions aren't so far on the pendulum that they're like destructive, but they're just kind of back and forth in the middle. Like, yeah. I think the world is a different place.
Yeah. And Kelly, maybe you could, because as Grace was talking, I was just imagining, like, I mean, I'm like, I need all of your information, like, and I need everybody to have all of your information, because I feel like so many people don't understand all the different ways that this is really hard to actually work around, right? Like, and so when you were talking about parents, I'm like, God, you know, like, how difficult is it to get parents to even like be on board with this being a real thing, right? Because they are, you know, like if they don't have the same kind of brain, it's like, just do it, right? Like a lot of people are looking for discipline. They're looking for, you know, like all, you know, like all of these kind of things that are born into people because of the system. But then also because of the system, like parents don't have as many options, right? Like when it comes to where you're sending your kid, right? So like I'm blessed that my daughter gets to go to an outdoor nature-based school, right? Like, so she, I mean, and this is where people are flocking to when they have kids who can't function in that typical system of school. But like a lot of parents don't have that option. So they're literally just like, okay, at home I can handle this, but they still have to go to school and function there. What do I do? So like, I'm just like, there must be so many challenges that you come up against in trying to help parents help their kids, that maybe you can talk about some of those things, so that if there are people out here listening that, you know, have kids or family members that have that kind of situation, maybe giving some pointers to help them get through that.
Sure. You are correct that the environment that the child is in is very, very important. And this is why it is important that ADHD is a diagnosis for that is entitles you to accommodation. Okay, so like that's why, like, I hate the idea that we have to put it in a book of disorders, but it's important that it is in that book, because that's what allows us to get the accommodations. Mm-hmm. And the way that I teach parents how to kind of manage all this is I use a model of executive functioning. And I use the model that was developed by a woman named Peg Dawson, and it has 11 different areas of executive functioning. And what I do is I teach parents to use executive functioning as like a lens through which we're viewing what's happening in home or at school or, you know, on the soccer field or at church or wherever it is. And when we look at it through this executive functioning lens, we take out the that it's personal somehow, like that they're doing it on purpose or they're trying to be manipulative or whatever. We can more accurately assess like what is weak, what skills are weak, and we can look at what skills are strong, like what are they good at, you know? And we kind of put it, I teach them how to put it together so that the strengths support the weaknesses, right? And then I teach parents that they can step in. I guess I give some permission for parents to step in and support the areas that are weak. Mm-hmm. One of my little handy phrases is that executive age is 3 years less than chronological age. And this is something that's really key for parents to understand, because there is a delay in the development of the frontal lobe of the brain for brains that have ADHD. And so the frontal lobe is where our executive function skills are housed. And the delay is about 30%. And so I'm not really good at math. I just say 3 years, you know, plus or minus, you know, it's average. But if we think about, like, you know, remembering to do your chores every week, right? Like my daughter is supposed to take out the garbage and the garbage is overflowing onto the floor, right? And she can look straight at it and not remember like, oh, that's my job to take out the garbage. But So when she is going to be 15 this month, actually, that's hard for me to believe. She'll be 15 years old this month, right? But her executive age is 12. So when I look at her, I see a 15-year-old and I go, man, you're old enough. You should be able to remember to take out the garbage. But when I use my ADHD knowledge, I go, okay, she's 12, right? Like, what, was she in sixth grade when she was 12? Or, you know, right? I didn't even give her the chore when she was that young. So, so then we accommodate, right? Like, create reminders, use visual cues. You know, there's all these different strategies that I teach parents how to, you know, how to do that, how to do those things to kind of smooth out what's happening. And the way that we look at problems in school is exactly the same. So we can take whatever the problems that are happening in school and we accommodate in order to reduce the expectation to the child's actual developmental ability, which is 3 years less than their chronological age.
Okay. I like that. And it's hard. I feel like because a lot of people don't like it. It's like any other thing that feels like a disorder or feels like it's a disability. People get like, well, I don't want to do that to my kid. But it's, and I hear that, like, because a lot of times people have difficulty with the science part of it and that it's so variable and that things can change. You know, when we talk about neuroplasticity being something that was quote unquote discovered rather recently, you know, it's kind of like, listen, we know certain things about the brain. We don't know everything. We're never going to know everything because everybody's brain is different, but here's a way to look at it, right? Like, and try it on. If you look and you see like, yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense that like what's important to me as this age is not important to them at that age, but then even less important if I start to think about how their brain has been developing, right? And it makes sense to me scientifically to think, well, if you're supposed to hit certain milestones by 15, but you've been taking in all of this input, all of this extra input, right, from the world, because that's why, then you literally can't sort through it fast enough to hit those milestones because you have so much more sensory input coming in. That makes total sense. And it feels like, you know, there are people who need to have it be more scientifically explained than just kind of like, hey, man, that's not how their brain works. Here's how it does. So I love that. And I'm glad that you brought that in because it really does help people. I feel like that helps me help people a lot when I have to talk about the brain function and saying, you can't expect your 20-year-old kid to think like a 30-year-old, but you are expecting that to happen. So how do we come back to where they're at and see them for who they are? So I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Safe to say, I mean, I know we talk about this together a lot about how if a child has ADHD, chances are one or both of their parents have it.
Yeah. This neurology is as heritable as height. And if we look to like anthropology for an explanation for that, think about hunters and gatherers. Okay. So ADHD brains are the hunters. And the hunters needed to have a heightened sensory system in order to stay safe and not, you know, be the hunted instead of the hunter. So, and the gatherers needed to have different skills. I mean, they had to have kind of patience and be able to do the same thing again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, ADHD brains are hunter brains and they have evolved with a heightened sensory system. The problem is that in today's world, we do not have an outlet for that, right? Not only do we not have to hunt for our food, but, you know, we sit in air-conditioned houses and drive cars. We don't walk anywhere. And we send kids to school where they are asked to sit still and be quiet and do these kind of things without, like, a lot of public schools don't even have gym anymore as an outlet. So this is very bad for hunter brains. Hunter brains need this, you know, they need sunlight, they need to be outside in the grass, which is why a outdoor focused education program is perfect. My kids went to an outdoor elementary school as well.
Awesome.
You know, right. Like that's why we're drawn to those things. Because as a parent, you can see, you know, like there are places where your kid fits well, there's just a couple places where they're struggling, right? And so if we can, you know, if we can find the right environments for them, they will thrive, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And the hunter brain, right? Like, I'm just like, thank you so much, universe, for Kelly's existence, because that totally, again, makes sense. Because if that's what you're made to do, and we talk about this all the time with our passions, right? Like, if you put your soul guy in a box, it's going to come out as a midlife crisis. Like, eventually you need to do what you were made to do, right? Like, and so if you're asked, if you're asking somebody who's meant to be a creative to sit down and be told what to do all day long, they're lacking the ability to use what they're actually here for. And so it's going to be, you know, and then they lack self-control because they're children and they don't understand that part yet either. So they're doing the midlife crisis on a daily basis, basically, because it doesn't fit for them.
Right. And so back to Grace's question, which I couldn't remember what it was. The neurology is as heritable as height. So, you know, like what that looks like is 80% of the time when I have two parents bringing me a child to evaluate for ADHD, I tell them, you know, 80% of the time, one or the other of you has the same neurology. So, and that's how I got diagnosed myself. It wasn't until after my son was diagnosed, I started learning all this information. And then I'm like, holy crap. You know, this is me, this is my mom, and I could trace it all the way back in my family line, you know? So it helps to know. I don't, you know, I can't explain, because there's so much shame for people our age. We knew we didn't fit, but, you know, and not all of us were diagnosed. So, or even if we were, there weren't any services. There wasn't any additional explanation, you know? And so here we are living our lives feeling like I have these problems, these things that are wrong with me, when it's not. It's just that we're different and, you know, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. And we even learn how to turn that, you know, like, for example, my mom, man, she is in almost in her 80s. She's 79 years old. She has more energy than anybody you've ever met. She's, you know, she promised all of her grandkids a trip anywhere in the world they wanted to go. Each grandchild got to pick where they went. You know, she's like in her 70s, living on a boat in the Galapagos Islands with one of her grandkids. She went to Japan and slept on the floor with one of her grandkids, you know, right? Like, she has done all this fun, adventurous stuff in her life. And I'm pretty sure it's because she's got ADHD, you know?
Yeah, that openness that you were talking about, right? Because you have to be open to be able to do those kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
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 Speaking of spontaneity, right? Yeah, from our reading, like, that kind of is, you know. But I also think, too, is that and understanding and working to understand as parents with children with ADHD, understanding them helps parents understand themselves, right? It gives them insight to themselves, because if a parent has ADHD and they have a child with ADHD and they're both struggling, it's like everybody's on the struggle bus and there's no real way to get off it. And when this information, or the parent begins to understand better ways to help guide their child, I almost safe to say that they will find some ways to help themselves in working through life, and how having those dualistic type of harmony. And, you know, and I know it's hard, because as parents are judged very hard about their children through teachers, through society, through, you know, even their own family judging them. Like, all of those things are really hard not to enter that shame conversation of having children. And so, you know, part of me thinks that, you know, if you have a child with ADHD, whether the child is fostered, adopted, or whether it's a stepchild or whatever that is, or your own child, I really think that the information is so valuable in so many aspects. You go through the avenue of wanting to help your child, but you end up helping yourself as well, because there's a whole new understanding of it. And, you know, I think, you know, Vanessa and I grew up in really rural areas where there wasn't any mental health conversations. There was very few like resources. And, you know, there was a state hospital where if you had any type of that behavior, you were put there because there was no way of coping with them. And I feel that we're kind of entering, we're the first generation to kind of get into that idea that it's okay. It's okay that we have these things and it's okay to be like this, that there's more information other than through the lens of, you know, we're considered broken because the society can't handle us and can't cope with us, which is, you know, I I have a whole rant about that that I won't do, but it just, it's hard because it's, we're taught to fear differences. We're taught to fear things about us, about our children, about the world, that it's wrong, rather than leading with curiosity, right? We're leading with fear versus curiosity about these things. And that isolates, and I think that alienates, you know, parents with children that have ADHD from so many places. And, you know, taking a child like that to an amusement park could be like a massive challenge or a massive like bomb waiting to go off. But you think, oh, my child, like taking your kid to Disney World was the thing to do, like, right? As kids, yeah. Like,
I have been there, had to, yep, put him on my shoulder. Well, my husband, he had one, I had the other one. We had to like call them out. They were so over, it was a disaster, yeah, for some,
yep, first, yeah, time with the two, same thing, kicking, screaming on the way out. And I was like, too long. We were here for too long, too much stimulus. Like, yeah, but it's hard to know, right? Like, until you're sensitive to it.
Yeah, you don't. You see everybody else goes. They love it. They're having fun. Not to mention you spend all this money because it's expensive, you know, and then you get there and your kid has the opposite reaction and you're like, oh my God, you know, what's going on? Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and I have to laugh, Grace, as you were talking about the rural, you know, how the where we lived, everybody who's ever spoken to me knows that I did not love living in New Hampshire. I got out of there as soon as I could. I was born in Massachusetts. Like, but as you were just talking, I was like, oh my God, that probably saved me, right? Like having this ADHD brain and being outside all the time because we had nothing else to do, right? Like, so it was like, I went to school and yeah, I struggled in school, but God, I mean, I had to walk to the school bus and walk on the way back. So I was outside and we were running and we were doing things. And I mean, all that probably saved me because my diagnosis came in 1998 when I went to college. I went to college and I was like, I don't know how to do anything. I can't study. I was overstimulated by everything. I went to a big city, right? Like to go to college. There was too much. All and nothing, and I didn't know what else to do. You know what I mean? Like there was nothing. All of a sudden, like there were so many things that were different, and I couldn't focus, and I couldn't plan, and I couldn't. There were so many things that were messing me up. So I went to the doctor and was like, "What's wrong with me?" You know, and got that assessment of you know ADHD. But like you said, they didn't know what to do in '98. They were like, "Here's some medicine to help you focus." And I was like, "Well, it's making me sick. Can't do that." You know, but trying to stuff yourself into a system without knowing what the things were that helped me, right? Like, because things got better when I, you know, joined a hockey team and was doing, you know what I mean? Like, and had a way to get physical.
That's what I was just going to say.
Like,
medicine doesn't work. Try going to the gym, doing a really intense workout, and then sitting down and doing your schoolwork. You know, yeah. Like, there's other ways to, you know, order your day to make it. So, you know, it's still hard. You still have to effort to do it. But yeah.
Yeah, there's still systems you have to force yourself to be in so that you can, you know, function in society. So you have to, there's some things that you have to tweak, but yeah.
That's what, I mean, one of my stepchildren, like I said in the last podcast, that's what saved him was that, you know, I knew that when he is not focusing, he's not settled, he can't sit still because he has more energy in his body than a Energizer bunny, right? And so, you know, his teachers would just force the issue. And I was just like, when, and I always ask them, when is he most focused? They're like, well, after recess and gym class and lunch. I'm like, yeah, because he has too much energy. He's a kid. Like, he'll get his work done, but it's like, we'll get it done. And it was, I knew that if I could do that and get him to go play, go run around the house. I mean, we made a game of it, and he would come in and he would be ready to do his homework. He was like, okay, I'm good. Like, let's do this. And he would be receptive, and he blossomed once like that idea. And at the time, like, I had nothing. I knew nothing. I was not this person. I was not into what I'm doing now. I was very much like just an average human that was just trying to help her stepson cope with life in a very different way. And I think any of us, even if your children have like moved out, gone to college, they're living their lives, I think this information is so important, because I don't know, I just, if we can have understanding and create understanding and take away the stigma of what ADHD is, I feel that it's easier to understand. And I think one of the things that, I think you brought this up, Vanessa, I don't remember where I heard it, I think it was us in the podcast, but it's like when you encounter someone with ADHD or even autistic, like on the other like part of the spectrum, it's, you know, we give them a pass when we learn that that's who they are, but yet we can't begin with that compassion as a, you know, just meeting them. It's like, I need to know your diagnosis before I'll give you the compassion that I would, you know, that because you're that. It's like, let's just give everybody, because chances are a good percentage of the people you meet in a day have ADHD or some sort of, you know, neurological challenge.
Yeah, because of systems, right?
Well, yeah, but you know, it's also the part of being human. There's this quote that I love by Deborah Adele. And it says something like, how we treat ourselves is in truth how we treat others.
Yeah.
And so humans, you know, we expect that other people think like we do. And so whenever we're interacting with other people, like that's kind of like our default, you know what I mean? Like that's just how it is. And when we interact with someone and they don't respond in the way that we think they should, then we have to kind of pause and be like, okay, what's going on here, right? Because that's our brain's job, is just to make meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that's kind of like how it works. So when we know the diagnosis, the brain goes, oh, now I understand the meaning. Okay, cool. But the truth is, you know, we all probably need to do more work in being more accepting of ourselves, mm-hmm. so that we can be more accepting of other people around us. You know, I think many of us are much, much harder on ourselves than we might like to admit.
1,000%.
Yeah. I mean, well, because I mean, everybody knows I'm like, all take down the system, right? Like all the systems, like take them all down. I know that we can't do that, but like, how hard is it for you to get people to buy into that thinking? Because I feel like it's a real hard road to get people to be like, what you have been taught and what is your programming and what is your belief system was installed based on a system that like literally doesn't take you into account as a human. So we're trying to break that down and take some of those beliefs about what you're supposed to do or what children are supposed to do, or, you know, I mean, and there's so many different beliefs out there, right? Like hardcore Christian beliefs of, you know, like honor thy father and mother. And it's kind of like, geez, you know, like sometimes it's hard to worm that in there, being like, yeah, that's like not going to work the direct way that you think it should, you know, and obedience and things like that. How difficult do you find it in your practice to get parents like on board with, listen, those systems, you can't really believe in them the way that we've been taught to believe in them, because we have to start to believe in something a little bit different in order to support yourself and your child?
Well, you know, I try not to approach it from the systems perspective. You know, I work with parents about what do they want. And their motivation in coming to me is because they love their kid and they want what's best for their child. And so I teach the educational bit about the ADHD, but I also have a segment in there, which is about the parents' personal values. And because your value orientation is really, really important. And your values are linked to your beliefs, you know, and we can't, it's not like flipping a light switch. I can't teach you all this information about brains with ADHD and then all of a sudden you can change your values. It does not work like that. So there needs to be, you know, this process of, number one, becoming aware of what your values are. There's millions of us adults running around out there who, you know, we never really sat down and thought about our values. Like, we kind of inherit them from our parents, from the systems, from all the things, but do we want to keep them? Are they serving us? You know, so that's kind of the first step, is to evaluate if you want to keep those values or not, you know. And I'll give you an example. Here in Florida, there are, I have lots of people that I work with that come, like, that are a Latino culture. And for them, cleanliness is a top priority. I mean, a top priority. I have heard expectations that kind of blew my mind, you know, I'm like, man. Okay. But, and when we do that value assessment, that remains the first priority, you know, for them. And if that is the case, then we have to formulate their parenting plan around that value. Because now, but when we do that, then other things have to drop off, right? Because we can only do one thing at a time. We can only manage so many things. And so it becomes like this process of just like knowing what your values are, prioritizing which ones of them are most important, and then sort of realistically looking at, you know, what we can do or not be able to do here, given the age, you know, like, it's like given the age of the child, you know, given wherever they are at. But that's how I approach it. You know, I do not, I don't know. I don't, it doesn't matter to me, like, what your values are, what your beliefs are. You, anybody can believe anything, but if they're coming to me for help with their child, I can give you the education, I can give you the roadmap, right, of the things you need to do to be able to get there. But each person has to find that motivation in themselves to do the things.
Yeah, it sounds like a natural process, right? Like, if it's like you're shining a light and that's all you're doing. You can choose what you're going to do with what you see, but here's the light.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I hope, you know, like, that's my goal, is to create a ripple in the world of hundreds of thousands of people who know the real information about what it means to have ADHD, right? Like, so they're not operating on old ideas. They understand the current science. That empowers them to be the best advocate that they could be for their child, so that when they bump up against those systems, they're going to share that knowledge. And maybe, just maybe, the systems can change a little bit. Yeah, like, you know, if you get enough people who know the real deal, then the systems will be forced to change.
Yeah.
And some of the systems aren't bad, right? Because, you know, because with the systems that we have, at least, that, like, without the diagnosis, they don't get the accommodation. And those types of systems, if we're going to live in a systematic society, we need them. So it's like, let's not throw all of it out, because sometimes it's the only way we're going to access care and help in ways that we maybe not. So I absolutely, I am just like, my brain is going 100 miles an hour with all this information, with this perspective, and having, being able to look at the world, look at people, look at ADHD with a very different lens. And I think that that's so important. One thing I'd like you to talk about, Kelly, is you just opened enrollment to your ADHD Parenting Balance Coaching Group. Could you tell us about that?
Okay, yeah. So it's a 6-week parent coaching program that is online, and it's called the ADHD Breakthrough. And the topics, you know, so each week, I guess, you get a workbook, and then there's a live component there, you know, a live call. So you get the workbook kind of a couple days before the live. You work through the workbook, then we come together as a group and then we talk about the workbook and the activities in the workbook. And then I give you handouts to also, there's a lot of handouts around. The handouts are more geared toward taking the knowledge that you learn through the workbook and the live, and then having tools to be able to teach skills to your child.
Love it.
And it's 6 weeks long. And my website is parentingbalance.com. My Instagram is at ADHD Parenting Balance. I post lots of education on Instagram. And so you can follow there. And of course, I have links to the sign up for the group on Instagram. But you can, you can read more information about the group on the website, which is parentingbalance.com.
Awesome.
Yep. And the group coaching page is parentingbalance.com/group-coaching. If you want to learn more about it, if you're interested, it'll give you more information. I really think that, and I feel it's accessible too, because, you know, being a parent, we look at cost, right? We're really looking at, I already spend so much money in helping support my child. It's sometimes hard to feel like, oh, I have to pay for another course. And I feel that the course, in looking at it, is very accessible. I feel it's, but it's important because, you know, in looking at your course, I feel it's like you're creating a roadmap, you're creating a system so that even though they may work on one event at a time, it's like you can rinse and repeat, so to speak, like use it for one issue or one challenge that you're working on, and then taking it and you can use the same thing and apply it to all the situations in the times that you need to. So it's not a kind of a, just an overview. It's an action plan for a parent, like the handbook. It's like, to me, it's like the handbook for ADHD, how to create success within your family and within your home, and like having that more of that harmony that you can see that you want, that I think most parents want. And so, yeah,
it's exactly the plan. The group coaching is exactly the way that my son and I figured out how we needed to do it. And before I started the online group, I taught the same system to hundreds of parents in my private practice. So now this iteration of it being online is a coaching business, but the system has worked for a lot of parents. And you do redo it. Like every year, I would go back through the same process to reevaluate, because as your child learns and grows, things change. And so then you go back through the same modules, and you don't have to buy it again. You will have it. Like once you buy it, you have it. Mm-hmm. And you just keep going back through it year over year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we have to do, because whenever the environment changes, what we see happening will change. And, you know, every year they get a new teacher in school, right? Yeah. Or, you know, and there's definitely places where the transition is more sharp, right? Like when you move from elementary school to middle school, you know, you're definitely going to have to revisit there. When you move from middle school to high school, you're going to have to revisit there. When you move from high school to college, you're going to have to revisit there. Because the time of actually the most difficulty for people with ADHD is when they are older. It's that transition. Yeah, it's high school to college, because that is when the greatest demand in your ability to perform executive functionally is on you as a person, okay?
And that's less structure. I didn't have structure provided for me, so creating my own, are you kidding?
Yeah. So, and it's super helpful for parents to get the information when kids are younger, because of course, you know, then that just smooths everything out for when they're older, but it's still something we have to be doing year over year for our kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that there's the advantage of joining your program is the psychology background, right? Like in addition to the personal, I mean, it is a perfect storm of being able to, I'm not just teaching from the perspective of a parent. I'm also teaching from the perspective of understanding the brain and, you know, psychology and even sociology, you know, like as it pertains to the world. I mean, I feel like, and it's not like to get into kind of like the elitist talk, but just knowing that that's like it's a very well-rounded way to look at things. Whereas sometimes we have coaching programs that are very, you know, kind of one-sided, right? Like here's very action plan-y, and that's okay if you need action plan and that's it. But like sometimes when you're shifting everything, including the way that you think, and you're trying to manage as a parent, like changing that, it really helps to have somebody who understands the family system, who understands the psychology behind it, in addition to having personal experience.
Yes. Yeah, it's very hard for people who do not have personal experience with this to understand it. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't, it's, you know, it is so complicated and nuanced. I just, you know, but the other bit is that emotion regulation, difficulty with emotion regulation is the most impairing symptom of ADHD over a lifetime.
Yeah.
So the emotion regulation piece is huge. That emotional symptoms are not in our current diagnostic criteria. So most of the people that you go to for treatment aren't even considering that aspect mm-hmm. in their treatment plan if they don't specialize or have experience with it. And so that's the other reason why my background is useful here, because I have a lot of experience dealing with teaching, you know, learning myself the emotion regulation skills.
Okay. Yeah. And it makes you more open, right? Like because you start to understand that you let people have their own story, which I think is, again, like difficult for people who haven't been through anything like that. It's hard to get into other people's story. It is easy to just kind of be like, this is the way that you do it. But, you know, it makes you more open to be like, tell me your story and we'll try to figure out how to make it work.
Well, and it does not work unless it is your story, right? Like that's just, it doesn't work like that with ADHD. It has to be self-driven. So not only am I helping parents get into their own story and write their own story, I am teaching them how to do that with their child, you know? So I provide, you know, kind of scripts for how, you know, how to ask questions, you know, what questions to ask, and a specific system. It's a problem solving system, but how to invite kids to partner with you to solve problems, because they have brilliant ideas. I'm telling you, they have brilliant ideas. And if we can just figure out how to let them tell us what they mm-hmm. need, things are going to be easier.
Yeah. And that's such a different, I think that's the thing that most as parents, we're taught to by our own parents and by the people around us that we're supposed to have the answers and we're supposed to know what to do. And sometimes we don't, because we forget that even though they're children, they're still individual humans and they have their own thoughts and ideas, and they're probably more relevant than what we think we should do with them, right?
They're untainted.
Yeah.
Well, and they're divinely guided, protected, and loved, right? They have a higher connection. And when we can tap into it, and it's easy. Like, it doesn't have to be hard, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Kelly, you have been a wonder and a delight to have with us today. Thank you so much for taking the time out and joining us. I am going to post the links to your Instagram, your website, and the course. When is the course beginning? When's the next round?
It starts on Saturday, March 23rd. Okay. And then the first live will be the following Thursday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So if all of you are interested, please go check it out. I'll have all the links in the descriptions below. Please just, you know, if you are a parent that has a child with ADHD, super, like, really consider this, because you will find a little bit of freedom in the relationship you have with your children and going through this course. So Kelly, thank you again.
Thank you so much. I mean, I couldn't stop asking questions. I couldn't stop. Like, I mean, it's brilliant what you're doing. It's beautiful work. It's what the world needs. And I know it because I see it. I tend to get a lot of adults that didn't have that kind of parenting and needed it. So it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yay. All right, angels, have a great week ahead. If you have any questions, you need us, you know where to find us. We will see you all next week. Take care, everybody.
Hey, love y'all.
If you were triggered by anything said in this podcast, please dial 911 or go to your local emergency room.
To more deeply understand your unique emotional reaction to today's podcast, I'd love for you to connect with me. You can find me at VanessaPerryCounselor@gmail.com or at www.vanessaperry.net.
And if you wish to take your healing further through energy work or channeling angels or the highest level beings, please reach out to me, Grace, at graceevergreen.com or graceevergreen@outlook.com. And always remember, you are loved,
you are worthy,
and the world needs your light.